Srimad Bhagavatam 10th Canto, chapter 62, Meeting of Kusha and Aniruddha. This chapter recounts the meeting of Aniruddha and Kusha, and also Aniruddha's battle with Barnasura. Of the 100 sons of King Badi, the oldest was Barnasura. He was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, who favored Barna so much that even demigods like Indra would serve him. Barnasura once satisfied Shiva by playing musical instruments with his 1,000 hands while Shiva danced his Tandava Nritya. In response, Shiva offered Barna whatever benediction he chose, and Barna asked Shiva to become the guardian of his city. One day, when Barna was feeling an urge to do battle, he told Lord Shiva, "Except for you, in the whole world there is no warrior strong enough to fight me. Therefore, these 1,000 arms you've given me are merely a heavy burden." Angered by these words, Lord Shiva replied, "Your pride will be crushed in battle when you meet my equal. Indeed, your chariot flag will fall to the ground, broken." Barnasura's daughter, Usha, once had an encounter with a lover in her sleep. Several nights in a row this occurred, until one night she failed to see him in her dreams. She suddenly awoke, speaking aloud to him in a state of agitation. But when she noticed her maidservants around her, she felt embarrassed. Usha's companion, Chitralekha, asked her who she had been addressing, and Usha told her everything. Hearing of Usha's dream, lover, Chitralekha tried to relieve her friend's distress by drawing pictures of Gandharvas and other celestial personalities, as well as various men of the Vrishni dynasty. Chitralekha asked Usha to pick out the man she had seen in her dreams, and Usha pointed to the picture of Aniruddha. Chitralekha, who had mystic powers, knew at once that the young man her friend had pointed out was Lord Krishna's grandson, Aniruddha. Then, using her mystic powers, Chitralekha flew through the sky to Dwarka, found Aniruddha, and brought him back with her to Shonitapura, Barnasura's capital. There she presented him to Usha. Having obtained the man of her desires, Usha began serving him very affectionately within her private quarters, which were supposed to be strictly off-limits to men. After some time, the female guards of the inner palace noticed symptoms of sexual activity on Usha's person, and they went to Barnasura to inform him. Greatly disturbed, Barnasura rushed to his daughter's apartments with many armed guards, and to his great surprise, saw Aniruddha there. As the guards attacked him, Aniruddha took up his club and succeeded in killing a few before the powerful Barna could capture him with his mystic Nagapash robes, filling Usha with lamentation. That is the chapter summary. So we'll begin now with text 1. Do you have the verse Sri Rajo Vacha written here? Mm-hmm. Okay. So please repeat. Sri Rajo Vacha. Banasya Banayam Usham. Tanayam. Banasya Tanayam Usham. Upayeme Yoruttamaha. tatra yuddham abhut ghoram Hari Shankara yor mahat Etat sarvam mahayogin Samakhyatum tvamarhasi Banasya tanayamusham Upayeme yaduttamaha Tatra yuddham abhut ghoram Hari Shankara yor mahat Etat sarvam mahayogin Samakhyatum tvamarhasi Banasya tanayam usham Upayeme yaduttamaha Tatra yuddham abhut ghoram Hari Shankara yor mahat Etat sarvam mahayogin Samakhyatam tvamarhasi Shri Rajavacha
Banasya tanayamusham
Banasya tanayamusham Upayeme yaduttamaha Tatra yuddham abhut ghoram Hari Shankara yor mahat Etat sarvam mahayogin Samakhyatum tvamarhasi Shri Rajavacha Banasya tanayamusham Upayeme yaduttamaha Tatra yuddham abhut ghoram Hari Shankara yor mahat Etat sarvam mahayogin Samakhyatum tvamarhasi Shri Rajavacha Rajavacha, the king, Parikshit Maharaj, said, Banasya, of the demon Bana, Tanayam, the daughter, Usham, named Usha, Upayeme, married, Yadu Uttamaha, the best of the Yadus, Aniruddha. Tatra, in connection with that, yuddham, a battle, abhut, occurred, khoram, fearsome, Hari Shankaryoho, between Lord Hari, Krishna, and Lord Shankar, Shiva, Mahatma, great, etat, this, sarvam, all, mahayogin, O great mystic, samakhyatam, to explain, tvam, you, arahasi, deserve. Translation, King Parikshit said, the best of the Yadus married Barnasura's daughter, Usha, and as a result, a great fearsome battle occurred between Lord Hari and Lord Shankar. Please explain everything about this incident, O most powerful of mystics. Please repeat. King Parikshit said, the best of the Yadus married Barnasura's daughter, Usha. And as a result, a great fearsome battle occurred between Lord Hari and Lord Shankar. Please explain everything about this incident, O most powerful of mystics. There's no purport here, so I'm going to go on to text 2, which is comprised of some 3.5 verses. Sri Shuka Uvacha Bana Putra Shata Jeshto Baler Asin Mahatmanaha Yena Vamana Rupaya Haraye Adai Medani. Tasya urasasato banaha shiva bhakti rata sada manyo vadanyo dhimamscha satya sandho drudha prataha shonitakhe pure ramye sarajyam akarotpura tasya shambhoho prasadena kinkara ivateya maraha sahasra bahur vadyena tandave toshayan mridam. And that means, translation, Shukadev Goswami said, Bana was the oldest of the 100 sons fathered by the great saint Bali Maharaj, who gave the whole earth in charity to Lord Hari when he appeared as Vamana Deva. Barnasura, born from Bali's semen, became a great devotee of Lord Shiva. His behavior was always respectable, and he was generous, intelligent, truthful, and firm in his vows. The beautiful city of Shonitapura was under his dominion. Because Lord Shiva had favored him, the very demigods waited on Barnasura like menial servants. Once, when Shiva was dancing his Tandava Nritya, Bana especially satisfied the Lord by playing a musical accompaniment with his 1,000 arms. Again, there's no purport. We'll keep going until we find one. Bhagavan sarvabhuteshah sharanyo bhaktavatsalah varenya chandayam asa satam vavre puradhipam. The Lord and Master of all created beings, the compassionate refuge of his devotees, gladdened Barnasura by offering him the benediction of his choice. Bana chose to have him, Lord Shiva, as the guardian of his city. Sa ekadaha girisham parshvastham virya durmadaha kivitenarkavarnena samsprasham tatpadambujam. Barnasura was intoxicated with his strength. One day, when Lord Shiva was standing beside him, Barnasura touched the Lord's lotus feet with his helmet, which shone like the sun, and spoke to him as follows. Namasye tvam mahadeva lokanam gurum ishwaram Pongsama Purna Kamanam Kama Pura Marang Kripam. Barnasura said, O Lord Mahadeva, I bow down to you, the spiritual master and controller of the worlds. You are like the heavenly tree that fulfills the desires of those whose desires are unfulfilled. Do sahasram tvaya dattam param bharayame bhavat trilokyam pratiyodharam nalabhe tvadrite samam. These 1,000 arms you bestowed upon me have become merely a heavy burden. Besides you, I find no one in the three worlds worthy to fight. Purport. According to the Acharyas, Bharnasura's subtle implication here is this. Quote, and so when I have defeated you, Lord Shiva, my world conquest will be complete, and my desire for battle satisfied. End quote. That's a short purport. I haven't actually studied for these verses because I was not told what the verses would be. But just a few comments we can make passing before we pass this section. Shiva was dancing his Tandava Nritya, and Bana especially satisfied him by playing a musical accompaniment with his 1,000 arms. What kind of musical accompaniment was Bana providing Lord Shiva? Anyone know? He was playing Mridanga. When Lord Shiva dances his Tandava Nritya, that's the dance that he initiates at the destruction of the material cosmic manifestation. Very aggressive, active, masculine style of dancing. In classical Indian dance, there are two categories of aesthetic presentation, particularly in the dance. One is called Tandava, and the other one is called Lasya. Tandava means this kind of very active, agile, and masculine style of dancing that was exhibited by Lord Shiva. The ideal percussion instrument to accompany that dance is considered to be the mridanga. Now, mridanga itself is a generic term, and it means any barrel-shaped drum that you play from the sides. So a dholak is also a mridanga, and a shrikol is also a mridanga, pakhawaj is also a mridanga, like this. So they're all mridangas. Lasya, on the other hand, is the feminine side, the aesthetic side, and the dramatic expression side of dance, the more soft features that we see sometimes. You really see these two are completely segregated from one another in Manipuri dance. You have either very soft and feminine, delicate presentation of emotional appeal, chiefly expressed through facial expressions and soft movements of the limbs. On the other hand, you have very passionate and aggressive masculine style of dancing, with drums, or even martial arts on occasion. This is the distinction between the two of them. So Lord Shiva, he is known for this Tandava Nritya at the time of the cosmic manifestation, and Bharnasura was playing mridanga to accompany him. Now, he got the benediction, therefore Lord Shiva offered him a benediction, and he chose for his benediction that Lord Shiva himself would become the guardian of his city, Shonitapura. I don't know offhand where Shonitapura is, but I'm going to guess that it was in Magadha, which is nowadays known as Bihar, or Charikanda even. So Bharnasura was intoxicated with his strength. He became a little bit proud, and one day he spoke to Lord Shiva and he said, I can't find anyone to fight with, and so the benediction that you've given me seems to be useless. This is an offense. If you get a benediction from someone like Lord Shiva, to tell them that what he gave you was useless is an offense. And moreover, according to the purport here,
The Acharyas tell us that he was implying that he wanted to fight Lord Shiva himself. So, this sometimes happens. A person is elevated or benedicted or given a great boon from a superior personality, and then he forgets, because this is the nature of all conditioned souls. We forget. We undergo some suffering, and we forget that suffering. We are uplifted from an otherwise hellish condition, and we forget by whose mercy we've been uplifted. This is the natural, especially for demons. And of course, Barnasura was, strictly speaking, a demon. He was the son of Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj is, of course, the king of the demons, technically speaking. Even though he was a devotee, evidently this, the samskaras run very deep. They're in your veins, they're in your nerves, it's visceral. It's very hard to overcome one's conditional nature, which is usually affected through one's birth. That's another matter. I've told this story before, but it's worth telling again. There was an old tiger who was unable to kill, hunt and kill for his livelihood, for his nutrition. And so he had to figure out some sort of stratagem, how to maintain himself. And so he devised this ploy that he was sitting by the side of the riverbank or the pond, and pilgrims used to come to bathe in the Kund, and so he was offering them gold in charity. And nobody would put their faith in a tiger, especially if he's offering them gold. And so he had the story that, no, I've become reformed in my old age. I've become wise. I no longer am killing people. And in fact, I feel very remorseful for a life of sin. And therefore, I'm giving charity to all the pilgrims who come here. So please accept this charity. Take your bath peacefully. Place your trust in me. And I will help you as your humble servant. So very few people would listen to the tiger. But one person came and accepted his story. And then as soon as he stepped into the river in order to take his bath, he found that there was quicksand there, and he couldn't move. And because he had a captive audience, so to speak, the tiger just very easily killed and ate him. So the moral of the story is, it doesn't really matter how many Dharma Shastras you've studied. It doesn't really matter what you think you are or what you claim that you are. At the end of the day, the thing that stands out supreme amongst all else is your conditional nature, your samskara. So this is a very important thing to consider. How are samskaras formed? How do they last? How do they impel us to activity? How do we disassemble them? Actually, the yogic endeavor, Sankhya endeavor, Sankhya and yoga, they're together. They're meant to extricate the conditioned soul from this mind-body complex infatuation that we undergo. They're meant to extricate our false ego from its identification with this temporary material world and the temporary material body that we're inhabiting at the present moment. And it is really only momentary. So they work very hard, actually, on this point. They try to focus the mind, they try to focus the senses, they try to restrain the body in so many ways. It's an eightfold path that we've heard about. Ashta Anga Yoga. Eight limbs. Yama, Niyama, Pratyahara, Pranayama, ityadi. Eight methods. Beginning with sense control, following rules and regulations. To withdraw from the worldly concerns, to focus the mind in meditation, and ultimately to come to the stage of samadhi. That's their hope. Whether they very often attain it or not is another matter. But the essential interest is not a bad one, and it's the same that we're pursuing in bhakti yoga. It's just that the process is artificial. It depends on one's own efforts. And therefore, because in Kali Yuga, we really have no qualifications, nothing to invest in such a process, as it were, therefore it's not advised. Even Arjuna did not think it was very feasible for him what to speak of ourselves. So Bilhamangala Thakur has written a nice verse in which he says that the one-pointed attention of the gopis far surpasses the eight-pointed discipline of the yogis. Because the gopis fix their minds on Krishna. That's the process. Savayamanaha Krishna Padaravinda Yoho Ityadi Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunana Varanane. And the best example of that is Ambarish Maharaj. He focused his mind on Krishna, although his senses naturally followed because the mind is the leader. And he's considered to be the example in that regard. So by this powerful process, the samskars can actually change, even in Kali Yuga. It can be done. And it's effected chiefly through chanting the holy name of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If one does this sincerely. If one doesn't do it sincerely, then one can get about as far as the yogis do, because the level of sincerity is the same. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tanstateva bhajami, Krishna says. It's an interesting word, bhajami. What does bhajami mean? Govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. What does bhajami mean? Ah? It means to worship. Krishna will worship his devotee to the extent that the devotee worships him. That's love. That is the difference between yoga, that is to say Ashtanga yoga, and Bhakti yoga. Ashtanga yoga is not love. And especially Gyan, there's no scope for love in the realm of Gyan because they don't admit anything second. Generally, Gyan leads to monism. And in the realm of karma, there's also no real scope for love because it's all business. Your interest in someone is limited to the extent and to the time period in which that person can give you what you want. It's all perverted, in other words, selfish, either in a gross or a subtle way. So bhakti yoga alone is when we come to the platform of actual love. And on that platform, Krishna is prepared. The word bhajami also means to reciprocate. He's prepared to reciprocate. He will share with us in this wonderful relationship of bhakti yoga, love, pure love of Godhead. That will change one's heart, in fact. Nothing else can do that. And it's effected through the chanting of the holy name. There are some examples here. If we read the Vishnu Purana, or if we read carefully the Laghu Bhagavatamritam, because that book is coming out pretty soon from the BBT. There we will see Rupa Goswami has cited a long passage from Vishnu Purana about Shishupal and Hiranyakashipu and Ravana. They were all the same person, known in the spiritual world as who? Jaya, the Lord's doorman. You know the story in the Bhagavatam? By the Lord's desire, they were cursed through the agency of the four Kumaras to take birth as demons because the Lord wanted to fight, and they also had some slight desire to serve the Lord in that way. This is the difference between the desire of Banasura and the desire of Jayavijaya. Jayavijaya wanted to please the Lord, whereas Banasura wanted to please himself. This is the essential difference between the demon and the devotee. The devotee wants to please Krishna, and the demon wants to please himself. So the activity is the same. They're both interested in fighting their master, but one is in the mood of service, and the other one is in the mood of envy. So Hiranyakashipu, when he took his first birth as Hiranyakashipu, he was killed by Lord Narasimhadev. We know that story. But he did not know who Narasimhadev was. And Narasimhadev also was not Krishna. At least he was not in the form of Krishna. Although all the multi-forms of Godhead are one and the same, at the same time, they're not one and the same. In Laghu Bhagavatamrita, Rupa Goswami says that there are three forms of the Lord which are actually extra special forms. They're called paravastha forms, in that they manifest special, extraordinary degrees of the Lord's wonderful qualities, particularly his mercy. So Narasimhadev and Ramchandra and Lord Krishna are these three Paravastha forms. And in increasing order, from Narasimha to Ram to Krishna, they exhibit more and more mercy towards the conditioned soul. So what this means is that even though a demon may be killed by Narasimhadev or by Ramchandra, that demon may not necessarily gain liberation as a result. In fact, they often don't. In fact, even Hiranyakashipu was not liberated immediately through his interaction with Lord Narahari. According to the Vishnu Purana, as cited by Srila Rupa Goswami. Why? Because he did not realize, number one, he didn't realize that the person who had killed him was, in fact, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for one thing. He thought, this is some extraordinary creature with amazing karma that's even better than mine. So he was killed in that consciousness, and his envy had not subsided at all, because he had no knowledge, nor devotion. So he was, although he was killed by Lord Narasimhadev, he was not instantly liberated as a result of that. Instead, he was given fabulous wealth because he was killed by Lord Narasimhadev. He was given the proprietorship of the three worlds in exchange for that slight interaction, even on the basis of envy. As a result of that, he took his next birth as whom? Ravana. Now, in his Ravana incarnation, the actual envy within his heart came to the forefront in the form of what desire? Sex desire. He was envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's wife in the form of Sita Devi, who is an expansion or plenary form of the Supreme Goddess of Fortune, the consort of Lord Vishnu. So he was obsessed over Sita Devi. He kidnapped her, just exactly as a dog steals an offering meant for yajna. And this act was, according to Valmiki Ramayana, as foolish as a foolish rascal reaching into the mouth of a hungry lion and plucking out one of his teeth. That's what he did. And so he was killed by Ramchandra. When he was killed by Ramchandra, then he realized, oh my God, this is that person who fully embodies everything that I'm envious of. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, my eternal nemesis. He's come to wipe me out. With that realization, he was in some way, he was certainly purified. And he was elevated such that when he took his next birth as whom? Shishupal. Then he knew exactly what was happening. He was becoming increasingly purified. First he got good karma, then he got gyan, and then as Shishupal, he got bhakti. Now how did he get bhakti? The reason is that he was dealing with Krishna. And he also understood that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even though he was envious of Krishna and spent his entire life criticizing Krishna and blaspheming Krishna, still, he was constantly thinking of Krishna and he was chanting Krishna's holy name. This is a very, very encouraging point for us. Because having realized what happens with this old tiger, that, you know, it's impossible for us to overcome our samskaras. Those things that impel us towards, especially in the modern day and age, usually demoniac activity, but certainly at least materialistic activity. It can be supremely discouraging to consider that it's almost impossible to wipe these samskaras out. But we are dealing with Krishna. And this is the point. Shishupala was also, at least nominally, he was also a demon. And he was chanting the holy name, not even with an intention to develop any bhakti, but with an intention to criticize. Derisively, he was chanting the holy name. Still, he was purified by his contact with the holy name of Krishna because Krishna is the most merciful supreme personality of Godhead. Of all the Paravastha forms, those Paravastha forms generally manifest more of the Supreme Lord's opulences, but Krishna in particular manifests the absolute superlative degree of the Supreme Lord's mercy. And because of this, he was becoming purified by his association with Krishna's name. That is not possible with the chanting the names of others, even other Vishnu forms. He developed love of Godhead, even if it was imperceptible to himself, until the very last minute. Because what happened is through chanting his entire life the names of Krishna in this way, and through constantly thinking of Krishna, he was gradually building up some, what we might call a critical mass of ajñāta sukṛti, unknown piety within his heart. And it all came to a head in the assembly hall when Shishupal was directly and vituperatively criticizing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, directly. Complete blasphemy. At that point, Krishna, all the yadus were ready to kill him, and Krishna was restraining everyone. Finally, Krishna said, okay, he's said enough, he's been purified enough now, I'm going to reveal myself to him in the form of my Sudarshan Chakra, which he invoked and cut off poor Shishupal's head with razor-sharp mercy. Now the thing is that, as Rupa Goswami describes it, at the very moment that he saw this blazing disc coming towards him to kill him, at that moment he not only realized that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he also realized that he had an eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, and that in fact the envy that he had manifested his entire life, what to speak of the previous lifetimes, was nothing but the perverted manifestation of his eternal love of Godhead. In the very split second before he was killed, all this became revealed to him in an epiphany, a flash of insight into his eternal constitutional position. And that was the function of Krishna's mercy. This is given as the example to prove why Krishna is the supremely worshipable personality of Godhead. It is, of course, we know the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Aradhyo Bhagavan Vrajeshatanayastadhama Vrindavanam. The supremely worshipable personality of Godhead is Krishna. And Uddhava himself in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, he also says, the famous verse, to what more merciful person shall I go other than Krishna? Kam vādayālum śaraṇam prajena. Because even though Putana came to kill Krishna, Krishna gave, and she smeared poison upon her breast and had Krishna sucking from her breast milk with the intention to kill Krishna. But Krishna only took it that she's come as a mother, so let me reciprocate with her in that way. He liberated her and he sent her back to Godhead, where she was given the position of a nursemaid in Goloka Vrindavan. So again, it's a similar display of mercy that especially characterizes Krishna and none others. This is why Krishna is the most merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have some hope, even though it seems that our samskaras are almost insurmountable, as were those of Banasura. And we're probably more demoniacs than Banasura was, because at least Banasura is described here, we've already heard. How does Prabhupada describe him? Or how do the translators describe him? Maybe it's not here, but somewhere else. Yeah, here it is. His behavior was always respectable, generous, intelligent, truthful, and firm in his vows. How many of us can say all these things? Are we always generous, always respectful, always intelligent, always truthful, always firm in our vows? So Banasura had an edge on us, didn't he? But we have an edge on Banasura because we are in the Kali Yuga. And in the Kali Yuga, Krishna, no one other than Krishna, comes as the form of, in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's specific qualification is that he's absolute mercy on steroids. Even more than Krishna. Krishna being the most merciful personality of Godhead, but when he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he becomes the most munificent and merciful form of Krishna. And we have the benediction of being given the holy name through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through the divine grace, his divine grace, in the form of Srila Prabhupada and the spirit, the bona fide spiritual masters who represent him. So this is a great opportunity for us, and we can avoid the bad example that's been set here by Banasura, because we actually have more mercy than Banasura received, if we just learn to appreciate that. So that the story will go on. It's 8:30 now. I think I'll stop. We'll hear what happens next. There are some longer purports, and we can discuss this some more. But if anybody has any questions on anything we've said so far, you can stop here. Dharma Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Guruji, thank you for the wonderful class. You mentioned Krishna fulfilling our desires. And it occurred to me one time, when I was trying to execute devotional service, and sometimes I felt there was a material need that I had, and I was wondering, you know, a devotee suggested, pray to Lord Shiva. You know? And I thought, wait a minute, we worship Krishna, you know. Shouldn't we ask Krishna, even if there's something material that we think we need, whether we're in ignorance or whether we really need it, should we pray to Krishna for everything?
Well, we are prohibited from approaching the devas, means the devatas, the demigods. Anya devashmayanai, Narottam Das Thakur specifically prohibits that. And in principle, it's not really consonant with the principle of pure devotional service to Krishna. One should take exclusive shelter of Krishna. This is what Krishna asks for. Mam ekam sharanam vraja, in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita. Now, on the other hand, when we do take shelter of Krishna, we understand that we are not necessarily taking shelter of Krishna directly. We are also advised to take shelter of Krishna through his devotees. And better yet, through the devotees of 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 Krishna, as many times removed as we can. So, in a strange way, in principle, it's also not necessarily incorrect to do that if you don't want to bother Krishna. But I don't know that Srila Prabhupada has encouraged that practice just the same, even though we can extrapolate logically in the way that I've done and justify it one way or another. Srila Prabhupada, once a disciple was, he found out, someone told him that a disciple was worshipping Ganesh, and asked him, is it okay if he worships Ganesh, because he wants to make a lot of money to donate to the Sankirtana movement. And Prabhupada said, this is the thing, we often get this idea also. So Prabhupada said, yes, he can worship Ganesh, provided that he pays thousands and thousands of dollars every month. So there you go. But in general, we should take shelter of Krishna only, because as he wrote to Tamal Krishna Goswami, a very nice letter, Krishna is not poor, he's Lakshmipati. He owns the entire creation. He can give you everything you want, but the question is, what are you going to do with it if he does? Just like Lord Shiva, for example, since you had suggested we might worship Lord Shiva. In fact, Banasura did worship Lord Shiva, and he was given 1,000 arms from Lord Shiva, but what did he do with them? The acharyas here are directly suggesting that Banasura was envious even of Lord Shiva. He was prepared to fight and try to attempt to kill Lord Shiva, the very person who gave him those arms. So, this is the idea. The heart has to be purified, and that's not going to happen by worshipping a devata, especially if we see that devata as being somehow equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Krishna. That becomes an offense against the holy name. It bespeaks of a lack of what we call sambandhagyan, an accurate understanding of what is our relationship with the Supreme Lord and his energies, and including his parts and parcels. So, therefore, we don't advise that. It's better to take exclusive shelter of the Lord and his devotees in our own disciplic succession. We can pray even to Krishna, akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udaratihi tivrena bhakti yogina yajeta purusham param. The person you should worship is the Supreme One, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, how should you worship him? In tivra bhakti yoga. Tivra bhakti means intense devotion, and exclusive devotion is implied and explicated elsewhere. So that's the process. And Krishna knows everything. As we said, yaya tamam prapadyante, as your desire is pure, he will reciprocate. And if your desire is impure, he will also reciprocate with something impure. Either way, you're going to get what you want. Whether it's given to you by Krishna through the agency of Yoga Maya or through the agency of Mahamaya, that we may never know. That's why we can't judge someone. Every fight between devotees is always basically based on this misunderstanding. Somebody says it's Yoga Maya, somebody else says it's Mahamaya. That's basically the general pivot around which all arguments spin. So the idea here is that we should take exclusive shelter of Krishna, and he will reciprocate, and as our motive is pure, he will bhajami, he says. He will worship us even, as he does with his associates in the spiritual realm. There's nothing that Krishna will not do for his devotees in his pastimes. And there's nothing that those devotees will not do for him, generally, at least in the spiritual world, that's how it is. And in Vrajatham, that's how it is. They're all absolutely unsullied, unmixed, pure devotees. That's the ideal that we should strive after. And if there's something else that we think is maybe going to help us along that path, then we can pray to Krishna for that. No harm. But always preface it with this qualification, my dear Lord, if you so desire, please X, Y, Z. Is that okay?
Thank you.
Anything else?
Since Lord Shiva is Krishna's devotee,
since Lord Shiva is one of Krishna's devotees, then how did he end up in battle with Krishna? Well, this is the wonder of Krishna and his leelas. All these things are arranged. I mean, it's just like we saw in the last chapter, for example, how is it that Balaram and Krishna are fighting about something as well? They're the same person. And the irony of how the leela plays itself out. Poor Rukmi, before he was ultimately killed by Balaram, he had to give his sister and his daughter and his granddaughter to the enemy. All three. Three generations he had to give. That is tangible proof of the principle Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, mokasha mokha karamano mokha jnana vicheta saha rakshasim asurim cheva ityadi. That the person who takes the demoniac attitude, he finds that every step his attempts are baffled and frustrated and destroyed. Poor Rukmi, he had to undergo all that. And in the end he was killed. And even the king of Kalinga had received extensive dental work by the mercy of Lord Balaram's club. So these are the wonders of the leelas. Krishna, you know, as we've already mentioned, sometimes he wants to fight, with his devotees, so he'll cover them over. Like Jai Vijay also, we've already discussed. Simple thing. And to show us something also, because it's said that the mother-in-law teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. So, you know, who else is really fit to display these principles of bhakti except for the Lord's pure devotees, of which Lord Shiva is one. He may look to be in Maya in this particular context, but it's not so. He's pure devotee of the Lord. Okay, anything else? If not, then we can stop here. Thank you very much. All glories to Shiva Prabhupada.